Muhammad Rasulullah by Abul Hasan Ali Nadwi. Chapter 14. The Truce of Hudaybiyah. The Vision of the Prophet. The Prophet had a vision where he had entered Makkah and performed tawaf, that is, circumambulated the Kaaba, the sacred house of God. It was a true dream from on high, as it later came out, although the period, the month and the year of the pilgrimage had not been indicated in the vision. The companions of the Prophet were overjoyed when the Prophet told them about the vision. Everybody esteemed and revered Makkah and the holy sanctuary there. The opportunity of paying a visit had been denied to them for a long time, but nobody had ceased to think of the holy city. They had been pining for going for a pilgrimage to Makkah all those years and were looking forward to that day when the heart's desire would be fulfilled. The Muhajireen were especially consumed with the desire since Makkah had been their birthplace. They had grown up to manhood in their city and they had been forced to abandon it. As soon as the Prophet informed the companions of the vision, all of them started making preparations for the journey while their over-enthusiasm at the Prophet, at the prospect of realizing the ambition of their life, convinced them that they were going to call upon the house of God that very year. Almost all of them promptly agreed to accompany the Prophet, for there was hardly one who wanted to be left behind. The trip to Makkah. It was the month of Zul-Al-Qa'idah in the sixth year of Hijrah when the Prophet set out to Makkah with the intention of performing Umrah, or the lesser pilgrimage. The Prophet had no intention of performing Hajj, however. Making a detour through the gullies of the hills, he came near Makkah and encamped at Hudaybiyah. He had with him 1,400 companions in the garb of pilgrims, along with the sacrificial animals, so that everybody would know that he was not going to war, but going to pay a visit to the Kaaba. The Prophet had sent a man ahead of Khuza'a to find out the reaction of the Quraysh. When the Prophet reached Usfan, the informer came back to report to him that the tribesmen of Ka'b bin Luyay had assembled a strong force of nomadic warriors to check his advances to Makkah. The Prophet, however, continued to drive ahead, but when he reached the place where the valley of Makkah slopes down, his dromedary called Qaswa knelt and would not get up. The men around the Prophet started babbling, "Qaswa won't get up, Qaswa won't get up." The Prophet said, "Qaswa has not refused, for such is not her nature. The one who restrained the elephants is keeping her back. I swear by him who holds my life, if they propose anything to me which reckons with the regards due to Allah and ask me to show kindness, I will certainly accede to their request." The Prophet then rebuked the camel with at once sprang up to her legs, but changed her direction and started off towards Hudaybiyah. She came to a halt in an expanse at the end of which there was a ditch which had but little water. Certain people complained to the Prophet that they were thirsty. He took out an arrow from his quiver and asked them to throw it into the ditch. Thereafter, the water started gushing forth and everyone was satisfied with drinking. Irritation of the Quraysh. The Quraysh were in a dire situation when they learned that the Prophet had pitched his camp so near Makkah. But as the Prophet had no intention of fighting the Quraysh, they thought that it was fit to send one of the companions to remove their apprehension. They sent for Umar ibn al-Khattab to depute him to Makkah. But Umar said, "O Prophet of God, there is none of Banu Adi bin Ka'b in Makkah who may protect me in case the Quraysh decided to kill me." Umar also suggested that Uthman bin Affan might be sent, as his entire clan was there and he would be very well to deliver the message. Uthman was then summoned by the Prophet and sent to the Quraysh to tell them that they had not come for war but merely for performing Umrah. The Prophet also asked Uthman to invite the Quraysh to Islam and cheer the believing men and women still in Makkah with glad tidings that God was about to make their religion victorious when they would not be required to conceal their faith. Uthman went to Makkah to deliver the message of the Prophet to Abu Sufyan and their leaders of the Quraysh. After the Meccans have heard the message brought by Uthman, they said, "If you want to go around the holy sanctuary, you may do so." Uthman, however, replied, "I won't do it until the Prophet has gone around the Kaaba." After his return from Makkah, certain Muslims said to him, "Abu Abdullah, you have been fortunate enough to fulfill your heart's desire by going around the Kaaba." Uthman replied, "Don't be unfair to me. I declare by him in whose hand there is my life. If I were detained here for a whole year and the Prophet were to remain in Hudaybiyah, I would not go around the Kaaba until the Prophet has done so. Of a fact, the Quraysh did invite me to make tawaf of the Kaaba, the house of God, but I declined." The Pledge of Ridwan. The Prophet was informed that Uthman had been killed. He summoned the people to take an oath to avenge Uthman's death. Everybody gathered around the Prophet impatiently. Standing under the shade of the tree, the Prophet took the oath one by one from 1400 people standing around him. Not one failed to take the oath, and at last the Prophet stuck one of his hands with another hand, saying that this is the pledge on behalf of Uthman. Thus, the Pledge of Ridwan was taken under the tree, which finds its mention in the Quran. Quote, "Allah was well pleased with the believers when they swore allegiance unto you beneath the tree, and He knew what was in their hearts, and He sent down peace of reassurance on them, and has rewarded them with a near victory." Parleys, consolation, and the accord. The deadlock still lingered on when Budail bin Waraka of the tribe of Khuzaa suddenly appeared with a few of his clansmen to straighten out the impasse. He asked the Prophet, "What have you come here for?" The Prophet replied, "We have come here to perform Umrah." Replied the Prophet, "The Quraysh are already wrecked by war. If they agree, I will make peace with them for a specified period, and they should give passage to me and my companions. If they want, they may league me with a group others have joined, and this would give them a respite. But if nothing is acceptable to them except war, then by Him who holds my life, I will fight them until I lose my head or Allah makes His religion victorious." Budail communicated to the Quraysh what was said by the Prophet. Urwa bin Mas'ud, who happened to be present on the occasion, advised the Quraysh that they ought to accept the terms proposed by the Prophet, for they were absolutely reasonable. He also suggested that he might himself see the Prophet, to which the Quraysh agreed. Urwa went to the Prophet to discuss the matter with him, but he also kept his eyes open to watch the behavior of the companions towards the Prophet. He saw that if the Prophet spat, the companions ran to get it out of their hands and rubbed it on their faces. If he asked for anything, they vied for completing his orders. If he performed ablution, they struggled to get the water he used. And if he spoke, everybody listened with attention. Nobody dared even to look straight into the eyes of the Prophet. When Urwa went back to the Quraysh, he said, "I have been to the courts of kings, and I have seen the splendor of Caesar and Khusrau and Negus, but never have I seen any king so revered as Muhammad by his companions." He gave details of his talks with the Prophet again and advised the Quraysh to accept the terms offered to them. The Treaty of Peace. In the meantime, another man of Banu Kinana, Mikraz, arrived in Makkah. He confirmed what the earlier emissary had told the Quraysh, and so they decided to send Suhail bin Amr to negotiate the terms of the treaty. As soon as the Prophet saw him coming, he said, "That they have sent this man, it seems they want peace." The Prophet also asked to prepare a draft of the agreement. The Prophet summoned Ali and told him to write, "In the name of Allah, Rahman, the Beneficent, Rahim, the Merciful." Suhail protested, "I do not recognize Rahman, but write as the custom goes." The Prophet then directed Ali, "Write in your name, O Allah." Certain Muslims demurred, "No, we must not write in the name. We must write in the name of Allah, the Beneficent and the Merciful." But the Prophet again said, "Let it be in the name of Allah." Then the Prophet asked Ali to write, "This is what Muhammad, the messenger of God, has decided." Suhail again objected, "I swear by God, if we had witnessed that if you were the Muhammad, you were the messenger of God, we would have not turned you away from the house of God, or we would have not fight you. You should write Muhammad bin Abdullah. I am God's messenger, even if you disbelieve in me," replied the Prophet, but asked Ali to rub out what has been written earlier. "By God," Ali said, "I cannot do it." The Prophet, however, asked Ali to point out the place to be rubbed out. Ali pointed it out to the Prophet, who removed it. The Prophet started dictating the clause. "The agreement is made that the Quraysh shall not obstruct the passage of the Muslims to the house of the Kaaba and shall allow them to circumambulate it." Suhail again raised an objection. "I fear the Arabs would say that we have been plained to you in making this agreement. You can circumambulate the Kaaba next year." The Prophet agreed to include the clause in the agreement. Suhail now bold to say, "If one of us goes over to you, he shall be returned to us, even if he professes your religion." The Muslims jumped in saying, "What? How can we return a man who seeks shelter as a Muslim?" The contention was going on when Abu Jandal bin Suhail, the son of Suhail bin Amr, appeared in chains. He had escaped from Makkah and had come to the Prophet struggling in fetters by a rugged, rocky track between the passes. Suhail lost no time to assert, "Muhammad, this is the first man I demand from you under the treaty." The Prophet replied, "But the treaty is still being written and has not been final." Suhail was excited. He cried in a huff, "If it is so, then I am not prepared to make any agreement with you." The Prophet said, "Let him go for my sake." But Suhail refused. He said, "I will not allow him to go even for your sake." Now the Prophet replied, "Then do as you please." Suhail was still foaming at the mouth. He retorted, "I have nothing to do." Grieved to hear it, Abu Jandal said plaintively, "I have come as a Muslim to you, and I am being returned again to the mushrikeen, to the polytheists. Do you not see what they are doing to me?" Abu Jandal had been put to severe torture for the sake of his faith. The Prophet returned Abu Jandal as demanded by his father. The treaty concluded between the Muslims and the Quraysh provided that both the parties would observe a 10-year truce so that men might live in peace and that no party would lift its hand against the other during this period. Another condition of the treaty was that if anyone from the Quraysh came over to the Prophet without obtaining permission of his guardian, he would be returned to them. But if any one of those with the Prophet escaped to the Quraysh, they would not be bound to return him. Yet another provision stipulated that anyone who wished to enter into a bond and security with the Prophet, he would be permitted to do so. And likewise, anyone who wanted a similar agreement with the Quraysh would be permitted to do so. Faith put to trial. The terms of the agreement and obligation to return without performing Umrah plunged the Muslims into the most profound depression. It seemed incredible to them how the Messenger of God had agreed to those seemingly ignominious terms. So dismayed were they that Umar went as far as to speak his mind. He stepped up to Abu Bakr and said, "Had the Prophet not told us that he would repair to the house of God and go around it?" Abu Bakr replied, "Yes," looking calmly at the angry face of his friend. "But did he tell you that you would have to go to the house this year?" Having concluded the treaty, the Prophet sacrificed the animals and got his head shaved. The Muslims sat with long face, for they were feeling beaten and crushed, not being able to visit Makkah and circumambulate the Kaaba. But when they saw the Prophet performing the rites, they rushed to follow him in sacrificing the animals and shaving their heads. Signal of victory. The Prophet then broke up camp to return to Medina. He was still in the way when God confirmed that the truce of Hudaybiyah was not set back but a signal of victory. He says in the Quran, quote, "We have given you, O Muhammad, a signal victory, that Allah may forgive you of your sins, that which is past and that which is to come, and may perfect his favors unto you, and may guide you unto the right path." Umar asked and that Allah may help you with a strong help, unquote. Umar asked the Prophet, is it a victory, O Messenger of God? The Prophet replied, yes, it is a victory. Failure or success? Not long after the Prophet had arrived in Medina, Abu Basir Utsba bin Usaid broke away from the Quraysh and escaped to the Prophet. He was followed by two emissaries of the Quraysh to bring him back. They reminded the Prophet of the undertaking given to him, and he promptly handed over Abu Basir to them. However, on his way back to Makkah, Abu Basir got clear of his guards and fled to the seacoast. Later on, Abu Jandal and some 70 Muslims persecuted by the Makkans also made a good escape and joined Abu Basir on the seashore, where they established themselves on a road taken by the Quraysh for their commerce with Syria. The Hand and this gang of Abu Basir now sought out the caravans of the Quraysh, robbed their property and spread fear and terror by killing any Qurayshite that came into their power. Once again, the trade of Makkah was in danger. The thing got so bad that the Quraysh wrote to the Prophet begging him by the ties of their kinship to recall these highwaymen to Medina, and undertook to demand no more of those who escaped him in the future. The treaty turns to victory. The events that followed prove that the truce of Hudaybiyah was a decisive step in gaining victory after the victory of Islam. The trader statesmen of Makkah had gloated over their success in extracting undue concessions from the Prophet. The Muslims on their part had been led to accept the seemingly inglorious terms of the treaty simply because their strong faith in the Prophet. Both the parties over soon found Islam making rapid strides in the Arabian Peninsula. It opened the door to the occupation of Makkah, and before long it became possible to send deputations for inviting the Caesars and the Khusraws and the Negus to accept Islam. The revelation of God had come true. Quote, though it is hateful unto you, but it may happen that you may hate a thing which is good for you, and it may happen that you may love a thing which is bad for you. Allah knows and you know not. Unquote. One of the advantages issuing from the truce was that the Muslims were no longer reckoned as exiles and outlaws, but were regarded as a community worthy of attention of the Quraysh, with whom they had made a treaty as equals. The alliance conceded the rightful place to the Muslims they deserved in the Arabian body politic, and perhaps even more important was the atmosphere of peace and tranquility. The unending war of attrition, so long carried on by the Muslims for their existence, had been dissipating their vigor and strength, which could now be availed for taking the message of Islam to the unhostile and rather ambivalent tribes of the desert. The truce provided an opportunity for the Muslims to meet and indulge in conversations and discussions with the tribes thus far hostile and antagonist to them, and this allowed them to appreciate the beauties and virtues of Islam. They now began to discover how the people who ate their food, wore their dress, and spoke their language, and were born and brought up in Makkah like them, had in a few years been changed into a new class of people, disdaining the corruption of polytheism and idol worship, hating tribal pride, vengeance, and lust for blood and rape, and had begun to take the path of virtue and justice. They could now clearly see that this change of heart had been brought up by the teachings of Islam and the guidance of the Prophet of God. Thus, within a year of the truce, and even before Makkah had been captured by the Muslims, as many Arabs embraced the faith of the Prophet had not entered Islam in the last 15 years. There was never a victory in Islam, writes Ibn Shibab al-Zuhri, greater than this. When the Amartais came, that is the treaty came, and the war laid down its burdens, people began to meet in safety and converse together, and no intelligent man was apprised of Islam who did not enter it. Within 2 years of the truce, as many as those who had entered it before entered Islam, or even more. Ibn Hisham says, Al-Zuhri's assertion is demonstrated by the fact that the Prophet went to Hudaybiyah with 1400 men, according to Jabir bin Abdullah, but 2 years later, the Prophet marched with 10,000 men for the conquest of Makkah. Those Muslims who had been left behind in Makkah for one reason or another were harassed and persecuted by the Quraysh, but now they succeeded, after the conclusion of the treaty, to convert a considerable number of young men to their faith until the Quraysh began to consider them as a new menace. These young men joined the hands of Abu Basir, who proved itself to be a new sword arm of Islam, even more dangerous to the Quraysh than the open warfare with Medina. Finally, the Quraysh were forced to beg to the Prophet to call these men back to Medina. To this, the Prophet agreed, and thus ended the distress of these poor men. All this came to happen as a result of the Treaty of Hudaybiyah. The attitude of peace displayed by the Prophet on this occasion, who also demonstrated his exemplary patience and moderation, did not fail to impress the tribe which joined their faith to Islam. They were led to hold a high opinion of Islam and to love and revere it, which by itself created a wholesome environment for the rapid expansion without any conscious effort on the part of the Prophet or the Muslims. Khalid bin Walid and Amr bin As. The Treaty of Hudaybiyah also won hearts. Khalid bin Walid was the promising general of the Quraysh army, who handled sword and lance with the same dexterity as he did the troops. Soon after the truce had been signed at Hudaybiyah, he accepted Islam and was conferred with the title Sword of Allah, Saifullah, by the Prophet. Khalid bin Walid proved himself worthy to the title as the conqueror of Syria. Amr bin Waas was another dashing commander who subsequently made a name as the conqueror of Egypt. He too accepted Islam along with Khalid bin Walid when both of them called upon the Prophet in Medina shortly after the Treaty of Hudaybiyah. Jazakallah khair. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.